Hello, everyone, and welcome back to another episode here of The Damage Report with me, John Iadarola. And boy, has a lot happened since yesterday's episode. We weren't wanting for stuff to talk about today. And we also have an awesome guest who's joining us once again, host of the Rashad Ritchie Morning Show. Rashad Ritchie, welcome back to The Damage Report.
Thank you for having me, my friend.
Always glad to have you here. It's been a little bit since we talked. My, has it been a crazy time?
Yep.
And God only knows what the next 2 weeks are gonna bring, but we're glad to have you here.
Glad to be here, man. Always a pleasure to be with you. And you just have one of the most remarkable viewing audiences on the planet. So I'm glad to be with them as well.
Thank you. Yeah. And thank you for all of you who are out in that audience right now, regardless of what platform it is. Thank you for joining us. We've got a lot of news that we're gonna be getting to, including reaction to what happened yesterday, the events over the night. We've got so much. Rats fleeing the sinking ship. That's gonna be fun. So please hit the like button and share the stream if you haven't already, so that people know we're live. And as we do the show, you can message us in a variety of different ways on Twitter and Twitch and YouTube and all of that, and we'll be responding as we go. Before we jump into it, I did want to remind you that we now sort of have TDR and TikTok. That's right. People had been asking, some of them, and it's now live. So you can go and search at The Damage Report on TikTok, and we'll be doing, you know, cool things. I'm a cool young kid. I'm gonna be doing the cool young kid stuff. So dancing, whatever. Is there a Twister? There's probably Twister, right? Because it's the kids. So I'm gonna be doing Twister on TikTok soon, so you can go search that anyway. It's ridiculous. Now with that, why don't we jump into the news? Still processing the events of yesterday, of course, which you're seeing beside us. Yesterday on the Young Turks, we did effectively the entire 2 hour show was exclusively about the incident in DC, the storming of the Capitol, the siege of DC, whatever you wanna call it, the insane extremist violence that we're seeing there that left 4 people dead in the end. I've talked at length about my thoughts about what happened, but Rashad Ritchie, I wanted to get your reaction to what happened yesterday.
Here's what went down yesterday. On January 6th, 2021, a group of terrorists who were radicalized by a leader known as Donald J. Trump decided to shut down democracy. And they did this with an intention of stopping the actual certification of a constitutionally mandated process known as a presidential election through the 1877 Electoral College Act. These individuals are not protesters. They are not simply an angry mob. They are in fact domestic terrorists. And I would add this to that conversation. A terrorist is an individual who utilizes criminal violence and intimidation in order to seek a political agenda. That is exactly what these terrorists did. And believe me, if their last names would have been Muhammad, it would have been a bloodbath on that Capitol step. But they were given the benefit of the doubt. And here's something else that I think is important for all of us to analyze as Americans. The government was well aware. Social media was well aware. We were well aware that these rallies were taking place at the US Capitol and capitals throughout the country. Why is it that law enforcement did not have a SWAT team on standby like they did with Black Lives Matter? Why is it they did not have a contingency plan to create a coalition of law enforcement agencies to step in if necessary, like they did when Black Lives Matter protested or the Million Man March was there? There was literally more security for the peaceful Million Man March than it was for these violent terrorists.
Exactly, yeah. You know, like, that was the most shocking thing. Like, there are some people that were shocked that Trump has violent radicals who support him. That doesn't make any sense to me. Or were shocked that this crowd wanted to do that in DC. I don't think that you get to be shocked about that either. But one thing I think is justifiable to be shocked about is the fact that, as one tweet I saw said, I hadn't known this whole time that the Capitol was guarded by 6 gas station attendants. Like, but there's nobody there. During this massive rally, Trump spoke this morning and told those people to march on the Capitol, and they're like, "Yeah, no, like put Fred and maybe Joe can be on standby, and I think we'll be good." And it's such a lack of preparedness that, right or wrong, like, a lot of people wonder if it was intentional. And when they see the video of things like the gates being purposefully opened up to let the protesters in, that certainly seems like they're intentionally giving access. And it's not to say that there weren't cops who, you know, like 14 cops got injured. We can see them fighting and trying to stop the protesters in a number of cases. But we can also see them taking selfies with them and opening up the gates. And it's all highly suspicious considering how dangerous this was. You could have had a member of Congress get injured or killed yesterday. That could have happened. More people could have died. Four already died. Two bombs were brought. And the cops have confirmed those were not non-functional bombs. They could have exploded and killed people. And so that they could have actually stolen the Electoral College ballots. Thankfully, that didn't happen. And there could be other lingering damage that we don't know about yet. And so a lot of people, I think, have very justifiable questions about why the National Guard wasn't there, why the Capitol Police weren't prepared. Was this just being insanely blind to what we all knew was coming, or was it a purposeful thing?
You know, and it may be a combination of both. I definitely believe that there's this sense of, well, nothing's really going to go down like that, right? There is this agreement among executives in law enforcement that they did not need to prepare for something criminal or something violent. When the truth of the matter is, you don't have to be a gumshoe. You don't have to be Sherlock Holmes to know, based on Twitter, these guys said they were going to do acts of violence. So if I can have access to that information from people who said, I'm going there to do A, B, and C, why is it they didn't take those threats seriously? And I want to remind everyone, roughly 2 years ago, there was a black female having a mental health episode at the Capitol. She was driving her car. Her baby was in the car. They didn't ask questions. They didn't utilize other tactics to stop the vehicle. They put bullets in her and killed her with the child in the car because they said they could not take a risk that she had a bomb or something else was going on. They killed her. No questions, no repercussions. And I'm not saying that cops should go around killing people just to kill them or just because they can. What I'm saying is, you show restraint when the skin happens to be white. Show that restraint for my black and brown brothers and sisters also.
Exactly. And with some of the video of, you know, the cops retreating up the stairs inside of the Capitol building and all of that, like people were incredibly suspicious of that. I personally think some of those, once they're in, it could be described as de-escalation tactics. But then we can acknowledge that, oh wait, so the cops do understand the concept of de-escalation.
I have never seen that de-escalation tactic in my life. I talked about this on air. I have never seen a cop literally be armed with three people in front of him that don't seem to be armed, running away from them as they charge him, running up flights of stairs, telling them to stop, giving them commands, and you not even draw your weapon whatsoever. I have never seen that type of de-escalation tactic before.
Yeah. Yeah, and look, it's possible that that cop, like that was one instance right there, was incredibly scared that were he to, you know, fire on a couple of the members of the crowd, the rest of the crowd could have swarmed him and killed him. It's possible that he could have been scared of that. These are insane, violent terrorists, obviously. Yeah. But if they know how to do this, but we see that employed in other situations where it's not against a person holding a Confederate flag. Like, could you de-escalate against people who aren't wearing shirts with slogans about how not enough Jewish individuals were killed in the Holocaust? Or is it just anti-Semites and racists that get the de-escalation? Anyway, there was apparently 68 arrests I read this morning. I mean, they've arrested more at like violent vigils outside of the Capitol before, which again seems like you were intentionally not rounding up these people. And many of them were gleefully taking photos, posting live streams. We know some high profile right wingers, popular alt-right media figures that were in Speaker Pelosi's office taking photos. So we know who those people are.
Yeah.
So now let's see if the cops do their job and track them down. I have a feeling they're probably not gonna do that.
Well, there's a new sheriff in town. Once Joe Biden and Kamala Harris are sworn in, and an attorney general is selected and approved, I really hope they take this seriously and they issue warrants for the arrest of those individuals. In the city of Atlanta, when we had our civil unrest, there were kids who broke into a mall. They called those kids thugs. Well, those aren't thugs. I'm from a hood myself. I'm from Glenwood Road. A thug is the person that'll rob you in broad daylight. These were kids taking advantage of an unfortunate situation. Well, the city of Atlanta, they impaneled a task force and they reviewed these videos And they investigated these kids and they issued out warrants for every single one of them because they stole a pair of pants. Now, if you can issue warrants for those kids, you absolutely can issue warrants for those who committed acts of violence and terrorism and looting at the Capitol, the US Capitol.
Yeah. Yeah, and by the way, normally at this point in the show, we would show you, you know, what Sean Hannity is saying about this or Tucker Carlson saying about this, but you already know what they're saying about this and they don't care. They don't care at all. These same people who are saying like if you broke a window at Target, you should go to jail for the rest of your life. They're now apologizing for and justifying the action that we saw yesterday. Tucker Carlson did a whole thing about how the only thing that you should be scared about coming out of this is the left, the socialists and communists like Joe Biden using this to take away your rights. They're not at all worried about, and like if it was actually Antifa that had been breaking down the doors of the Capitol building, Tucker Carlson's head would have exploded. The entire show would have just been dripping red bits. But no, in this case, like half of them are saying it was Antifa, like Matt Gaetz on the House floor last night saying it's Antifa. The other half are proving that they know it's not because they're apologizing for them. If it was Antifa secretly, why are we the ones calling for them to be arrested? And why is Trump saying, I love you, you're very special people? Wait, Trump, no, don't say that. That's Antifa you're talking about. And so they've got these cross signals about, they're all sure of one thing. It's that nothing bad happened that the right needs to apologize for. They're just really confused about exactly what the excuse is in this particular case.
You remember Trump said, when the looting starts, the shooting starts. And it seems as if that just has selective application, obviously.
Yep. And if you damage, you know, a Confederate statue, 10 years minimum, no excuses. Mm-hmm. Now these people who are looting the Capitol building, they're I love them. They're so special. I understand their anger.
But remember, they were radicalized. Anyway. These individuals were radicalized for 4 years by President Donald J. Trump. And it's really interesting when we do a case study of this to understand who these people are. Remember, you have military veterans who are part of this. One that got killed was an Air Force veteran. You have young people who are part of this. This happened because not only of Trump, you see, Trump is more of a symptom. This happened because in order to be a tyrannical leader, you need a team. There cannot be tyrannical leadership without a team. He had a team. He had Mitch McConnell. He had Lindsey Graham, Ted Cruz, and others who were willing to do the unthinkable and protect him every step of the way. And that tyrannical leadership has to now be checked, not only from Trump. I know everybody's saying he needs to be removed. He should have been removed day one after he got sworn in. We've been saying that for 4 years. Now they're saying it and they're resigning and everybody's saying, oh, enough is enough. Putting out tweets about, you know, this has gone too far. You don't get to apologize on Twitter and think we're going to forget what you did to our democracy.
Exactly. Yeah, you don't get to apologize when like the packing has already begun for the end of your 4-year term. Yeah. But anyway, they are trying to do that. And so why don't we turn to that right now, actually, because we got a lot of those. You know, following the violence in DC yesterday, some in the Trump administration are no longer in the Trump administration and others are criticizing Trump's complete lack of response. And before we get into this, and we can debate how much, if any, credit any of these individuals get. As of right now, we had yesterday, Trump put out like 3 different statements, like a couple of tweets that ended up having to literally be taken down. The first time I've ever seen Twitter actually take down his tweets. He was then suspended as a result of that. He then put out a video telling the terrorists that he loves them and they're very special people. And then that has effectively been it. The president had been radio silent since then. After the Capitol was looted, he didn't have anything to say. So here is what we've got. Trump officials resigning include Matt Pottinger, the deputy national security advisor, Stephanie Grisham, chief of staff to First Lady Melania Trump, Sarah Matthews, the deputy press secretary, Ricky Nassetta, White House Social Secretary, Mick Mulvaney, actually, former White House Chief of Staff, Mick Mulvaney has resigned, and Ryan Tully, Senior Director for European and Russian Affairs at the National Security Council. They have now resigned, as well as apparently Tyler Goodspeed, the acting chair of the White House Council of Economic Advisors. And we have heard that Steven Mnuchin is not. So some are stepping down, although again, remember, the administration is gone bye-bye in 2 weeks. So Rashad, how much credit do they get?
Who the F cares that they resign? 13 days left. And I promise you, these guys would not have resigned if he had a year left. 2 years left. So they can miss me with it. They resigned because the job is almost over anyway. This is a way for them to save a little political face or attempt to. The public relations nightmare has gone out of control. But this is the pure definition of chickens coming home to roost. You sent these chickens out. We didn't send these chickens out, you did. And we've been telling you for years, these are the chickens you're sending out. And now they have come home to roost and they're roosting on your front porch.
I saw a tweet to the effect of, oh my God, the monster turned on its creator. Is there any precedent for this in film or TV? Or like, yeah, this is like, we're gonna get to some headlines and stuff. It's just, it's so much of this just feels in hindsight like, yeah, I guess this was exactly how it had to be. I guess this was the only way it could have been. Anyway, we do have other people leaving the Trump administration, although not resigning, interestingly. Chad Wolf, the acting Secretary of Homeland Security, put out this statement this morning. What transpired, and this is, by the way, this is a guy who has defended Trump a ton, defended his immigration policy and all that. He said, what transpired yesterday was tragic and sickening. While I have consistently condemned political violence on both sides of the aisle, we now see some supporters of the president using violence as a means to achieve political ends. This is unacceptable. These violent actions are unconscionable, and I implore the president and all elected officials to strongly condemn the violence that took place yesterday. I will remain in my position until the end of the administration to ensure the department's focus remains on the serious threats facing our country and an orderly transition to President-elect Biden's DHS team. So, there, he is saying that these are Trump supporters, they're not Antifa, and Trump needs to condemn them. Well, Trump has responded to that call by withdrawing Chad Wolf's nomination to be the permanent Homeland Security Secretary. He had just been acting, and Trump responded to that by effectively removing him from his position. So he didn't say anything, but I feel like we got the message, Rashad.
Yeah, absolutely. And this goes back to the reality of who Trump is, number one, and the reality of who we are as a country. Trump did not do this by himself. Yes, he has a wrecking ball leadership style. Yes, he's an extremist. Yes, he is in fact the radical. But he also had such significant support with a large demographic, a large population of Americans. He was able to get away with it. And there was a time when Republicans could have saved and salvaged the democracy. It's right now in shambles, and I would predict you're not gonna get a Republican president in our lifetime again. Just not gonna happen. That's my prediction today. They will obviously continue to fight and continue to be competitive, but you gotta watch out now for Trump coming back without being president. And the question is he more dangerous or less dangerous? I say more dangerous because he has zero restriction at that point in what he will say and what he's willing to endorse and promote.
Yeah, I mean, look, hypothetically, he also has less protection from legal consequences.
Correct.
Except that he's an incredibly wealthy white man, so he has a lot of protections from legal consequences. Now, by the way, let's stop for 1 second. And like occasionally, we're being swept down a river of politics. For a second, let's acknowledge the president's supporters tried to sack the Capitol. In response, one of his chosen defenders, his Secretary of Homeland Security, calls on him to denounce terrorism. He removed him from his position. That should be terrifying for one of several reasons. One is that he's almost certainly going to then replace this guy with someone who doesn't want him to denounce terrorism. And one might wonder, what's the point of replacing him? There's only 13 days left. I don't know. I hope that there's no point. I hope that he doesn't desperately need someone in that position to do something or anything, but we'll see. The other is that hypothetically, a lot of conversations going around DC right now about the invocation potentially of the 25th Amendment. Chad Wolf potentially could have, I don't know about if acting secretaries can vote because honestly, America's never gotten to this point before. But in theory, he could have been one of those votes to invoke the 25th Amendment. Trump got a pretty good signal of how he might vote from that message and has just removed someone who might be an emergency check on the president if he does something even crazier. We now don't have that. Chad Wolf is gonna be out apparently.
Yeah, and the 25th Amendment never been triggered as far as removing a president. We've triggered portions of it, but not that part. I think it is a viable option if we were talking about a year ago, 2 years ago, but the bureaucracy is just too deep. You literally have to get the vice president, the cabinet, 2/3 of the US Senate. If the president decides to object to it, it creates a whole nother bureaucracy after he objects to his own removal from the White House. I say this, and I told my listeners this on air today. Here's what needs to happen. If they're serious about this guy not doing something even more insane and volatile in the next 13 days, go ahead and impeach him, convict him, hold a one-day trial, remove him. The Constitution literally allows you to do this in one day if you get it together the right way.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and a lot are calling for it. Chuck Schumer this morning called for him to be removed from office. Representative Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez wants him removed from office. She also called for Josh Hawley and Ted Cruz to step down based on their continued support for this effort after the terror attack. So we'll see. We'll see.
Yeah. What are corporations going to do? At this point, I'm going to start holding corporations responsible. If they make contributions to the Trump campaign, to the Trump PAC, if they make contributions to those who are Trump surrogates and Trump supporters, I'm coming for them in 2021. They are supporting this madness, and they are being, these individuals are being enabled by these same corporate entities.
Yeah, and if they're supporting Ted Cruz and Gosar and all of those, they are paying to continue this undermining, this continued assault on democracy. Now, Rashad, let's play a quick little game. Scale of 1 to 10, how much do these people deserve credit based on what I'm going to tell you about them? So, Mitt Romney put out a statement. What happened today was an insurrection incited by the president of the United States. Mitt Romney, how much credit does he deserve?
I give Mitt a 5, man.
I give him a 5? Okay. Yeah. Okay. GOP Representative Adam Kinzinger is, I believe, the first, and I think to this point, the only elected representative on the GOP side who has called for Trump to be removed via the 25th Amendment. He put out a video. He says, and he's a current serving congressman for the Republicans. He says he needs to be removed. It's too dangerous. Get him out of there.
He gets a 1 because he supported this madness for 4 years. And now you got down to 13 days. You want to say something like this. He gets a 1.
Okay. Kelly Loeffler said, when I arrived in, this is late yesterday. When I arrived in Washington this morning, I fully intended to object to the certification of the electoral votes. However, the events that have transpired today have forced me to reconsider, and I cannot now in good conscience object. So Kelly Loeffler, who was just rejected by the voters of Georgia, is no longer supporting the effort, or was no longer supporting the effort to overturn the vote. Some people like Kathy McMorris Rodgers and Steve Daines also had, they were going to support stopping the vote, and they have switched as a result of what happened yesterday. How much credit does Kelly Loeffler and them get?
Yeah, Loeffler gets a negative 10. And the reason she gets a negative 10 is because she literally incited the crowd before she went in and said that she was planning to object. She is part of the, was part of the speaking circuit for that same group. So yeah, she's a negative 10.
Yeah, that last rally right before her election, she came out and her big applause line was, I'm going to support Ted Cruz and all of them with stopping the vote.
That's right.
Okay, well, you got the applause. And you know who was in that crowd? People who are ideologically indistinguishable from those who stormed the Capitol. Might have even been some of the same people, honestly. Maybe we'll find out. Anyway, one other individual, this is a former Attorney General William Barr said, orchestrating a mob to pressure Congress is inexcusable. The president's conduct yesterday was a betrayal of his office and supporters. So is William Barr a new resistance hero?
He gets a 0. he's at goose egg. He's at 0. And the reason this guy gets a 0 from me is because he manipulated that office. He, from day one, from how he did the Mueller report to how he came out before the Mueller report was released and said, oh, it's just nothing here. There's no evidence. And it was all a lie. He acted as the personal attorney for Donald Trump and not the attorney general of these United States of America. He was involved in the Ukraine deal. I mean, this guy. Yeah. Got his hands dirty with Donald Trump for a long time. So no, he gets no credit because he's figured out how to tweet something decent.
I 100% agree. He tried to cover up the Ukraine thing. He tried to stop the whistleblower's account from coming out that set the whole thing in motion. And finally, one more. Leader of Facebook, Mark Zuckerberg, put out a statement today saying that they're going to be banning Trump indefinitely on the platform. At the very least, until the inauguration, because of how dangerous he's become. They might reinstate him after that. It might be permanent. We don't know. But Mark Zuckerberg and Facebook, how much credit do they deserve?
Let me tell you this, man. I got a homeboy named Dinky. Dinky was raised with me. Dinky put on Facebook one day in an argument. He said, I'm going to come see about you. He was in an argument with somebody. To this day, he's not allowed back on Facebook for that comment.
Wow.
Donald Trump has literally threatened to blow people up, to use bombs. He has incited violence intentionally. He has done it as a routine. So I get it, Mark. The guy has 13 days left. I would have given you a 2. You get a 1. I would have given you a 2 if you left out the part about the inauguration.
Mm-hmm. Exactly. Yeah. Yeah. Mark Zuckerberg, like, first of all, I'm done with Mark Zuckerberg for the rest of my life. I don't care what he says or does. I don't care what reason. It's something self-serving because that's the only thing he can do. Now, Mark Zuckerberg.
Yeah.
Now he's now become too dangerous. Like, there is a case to be made that if in 2015 or early 2016, Facebook had actually cared at all about fake news and not like CNN fake, I mean, literal invented news to whip your mom and your grandpa into a fury to support Trump. If they had taken that seriously, Trump might not have been president in the first place. And they allowed him to lie in ads. It's been well documented. We had Jeff Luggum on so many times to talk about it. They, for years, he has been benefiting not just Donald Trump, but all of the grifters and right-wing media that have been propping up Donald Trump. They have been advantaging them and exempting them from the requirements every step of the way. And now, when we can see the light at the end of the tunnel, Mark Zuckerberg wants to be like, oh no, remember me as one of the good guys.
Right.
No, no, doesn't happen. Anyway, yeah, so altogether, all of the Republicans get like 8 out of 100.
There you go. Correct. That sounds about right, actually. Right.
Yeah, exactly.
We need to talk about a relatively new show called the Republic, or UNFTR. As a Young Turks fan, you already know that the government, the media, and corporations are constantly peddling lies that serve the interests of the rich and powerful. But now there's a podcast dedicated to unraveling those lies, debunking the conventional wisdom. In each episode of the Republic, or UNFTR, the host delves into a different historical episode or topic that's generally misunderstood or purposely obfuscated by the so-called powers that be. Featuring in-depth research, razor-sharp commentary, and just the right amount of vulgarity, the UNFTR podcast takes a sledgehammer to what you thought you knew about some of the nation's most sacred historical cows. But don't just take my word for it. The New York Times described UNFTR as consistently compelling and educational, aiming to challenge conventional wisdom and upend the historical narratives that were taught in school. For as the great philosopher Yoda once put it, you must unlearn what you have learned. And that's true whether you're in Jedi training or you're uprooting and exposing all the propaganda and disinformation you've been fed over the course of your lifetime. So search for UNFDR in your podcast app today and get ready to get informed, angered, and entertained all at the same time.
I tried yesterday on the show to do a public service to any Trump fans who were watching this by telling them that despite what they might have heard by all the media that they trust more than they trust God himself, they're not going to stop Biden from becoming president by overturning the vote or not counting electors or sending it back to the states or anything like that. I told them very clearly what's going to happen. And there were a few bumps in the road, like the attempted sacking of the Capitol. But in the end, Congress confirms Biden's win, as we said, defying the mob attack. And by the way, look at this front page. That's a front page for the New York Times. Defying mob attack incited by Trump. And again, it's one of those things where it's just like, yeah, I guess that front page was always going to come. Somebody finally beats him, hopefully, but there was a mob attack and Trump incited it. Anyway, Congress certified the election early Thursday, hours after loyalists urged on by President Trump stormed to occupy the Capitol. Congress rejected an attempt from Republicans to overturn the will of Pennsylvania voters early Thursday. So if you stopped paying attention after all the chaos in the Capitol, I understand yesterday was a lot. But for hour after hour, you had speeches being made, lies being told about those events and about voter fraud and attempts by a number of senators and representatives to overturn things. In the end, I want you to remember people like Josh Hawley, Ted Cruz, Tommy Tuberville, Cindy Hyde-Smith, Roger Marshall, Cynthia Lummis, Rick Scott. These are all people that didn't just give speeches or whatever. They voted to stop the will of the people. Every single one of them knowing that there wasn't voter fraud. They all know that Trump got destroyed, but they don't care because they support him and their own ambitions more than they do democracy and the will of the people.
Yep. And people that don't like your vote, why should we vote for them? They obviously don't like the process of democracy. They need to move on and get another job. But this should also really bring to the forefront how fragile democracy is. Mm-hmm. If Trump has done nothing else, he has taught all of us that democracy is fragile. And since we know it is fragile, let us be more careful about the leaders we choose, not just in the presidency, but the presidency and beyond. Remember, he had a team. That team helped him almost destroy democracy in this country.
Exactly. Yeah, and let's also, like, you know, the win was certified in less than 2 weeks. Biden is gonna be president. This is all a great improvement from the situation. And Trump's attempt to either get reelected or have the results be overturned are going to fail. So all of that is good.
Yes.
But Trump also got to be president for 4 years. And that team that Rashad was talking about, they delivered for him and for their donors and their buddies what they wanted. They got those trillions of dollars in tax cuts. They banned Muslims from a bunch of countries from entering. They've spent tens of billions of dollars on that border wall. They ground the US government response to the pandemic to a halt to benefit them, to not spend money on it that they didn't think was worth it because they were never at risk. Hundreds of thousands of people died. When Biden becomes president, we now have an opening. We have an opportunity for some good things to happen. But all those bad things happened. Those three Supreme Court justices, those dozens and dozens and dozens of federal judges, all of those results still remain. We have a lot of not just new work to do, but a lot of fixing the damage that's been done as well.
Yeah, and I really hope Democrats will seize the opportunity quickly. For example, Raphael Warnock, right? Reverend Warnock and both John Ossoff won their US Senate races in the state of Georgia. I happen to be friends with both of them. I've known both of them for many, many years.
Really?
Great people, right? And they came on my show multiple times and we've had drinks together when I was still a drinking man. We've had dinner together. These are good people. The reality of Reverend Raphael Warnock is this. He will only be in the US Senate for 2 years because he took over a special election due to the resignation of Senator Johnny Isaacson. He got 2 years. In other words, the Democrats or the progressive agenda has 2 years before it becomes in jeopardy again. And Warnock is willing. He campaigned on a progressive platform. Ossoff is even more progressive than he is. There's an opportunity here, as you said, there's an opening here, but that opening will not be indefinite.
Yeah. Yeah. So look, this is this is the first big run for him, not the first for Ossoff. And both of them are obviously more progressive than a lot of current elected senators, obviously, but not necessarily on certain issues quite as strong as I would personally prefer. I don't know them personally. So do you think that now that they're in the position, especially with Warnock knowing that he has to start campaigning for reelection in like 9 months?
Yeah.
Are they going to have a fire lit under them? Do you expect them to be really bold and really stake out a progressive position in the caucus?
Well, I hope so. And let me tell you this, even though they're my friends, I've had to put my foot up their rear end a couple of times on my radio show. I'm courteous enough to let them know via text what I'm about to do. So myself and others who believe in an agenda of policy over personality, we will absolutely hold them accountable. And this is what has to happen. You can't take the politic out of politicians. And I remind my college students of this all the time. We're looking for transformational leaders. If you find one, great. But just assume everybody's transactional. And you're looking for the benefit of the transaction. If you can deliver votes and support and promotion and endorsement and money, that's the transaction. That's how politics works. That's the oil inside of the engine of the political world. And if you can deliver these things, you can actually deliver an agenda. So instead of being just a thorn in their side and yelling that this needs to happen, this needs to happen, I organize. The one thing that politicians are afraid of, they're not really afraid of a negative story. They're not really afraid of a scandal. They're afraid of you being organized. That's what they're afraid of. And inside of the Democratic Party and outside of the Democratic Party, the methodology is the same. Hold them accountable to a policy position, not a personality or them being a good guy.
Yeah, no, it's a great point. And by the way, related to that, like there is a predisposition towards focusing on the bad news and dwelling on it, which I understand, and not appreciating enough when good things happen. That predilection had a bunch of gasoline thrown on it and a match thrown at it with the events of yesterday, because we had like 2.5 minutes to be like, hey, look at what just happened in Georgia. Right. Two elections just went to the Democrats and they got control of the Senate after years of organizing the hard work required to turn Georgia maybe temporarily blue, maybe starting to be permanently blue. We'll see. So let's not gloss over too fast. Like, that's still a very good thing. And so, yeah, I it's gotta have been so much work in Georgia with all the voter suppression and that's been going on for literally centuries. Yeah,
let me tell you how difficult it was, man. Literally, we were fighting false narratives every day. And these false narratives had all of this racial undertone about, I mean, they called the guy radical Raphael Warnock. You know, they used to call Dr. King radical. That was really a terminology in the 60s used for black civil rights activists. And they would say radical, right? And no other explanation was needed. Well, that rhetoric continued. They tried to attack him personally. They went after Ossoff in a very similar way about him being too radical. So here's what we did, and some of this hasn't really been reported, but I want to share with your audience some unique factors that took place. In the state of Georgia, we coordinated in black radio with all of our competitors. We have never done something like this before, and we're sworn enemies for the rest of the year. But during the election, we coordinated our efforts and we did Black Radio United for the Vote campaign. Every single one of us worked with each other to every day, not one day a week, not 2 days a week, 7 days a week. Every single day you listen to any urban radio station in Metro Atlanta, and we got a lot of them. You heard the messaging of get out to vote, make a plan to vote, voter early. Here's where you get your voting information from. Mm-hmm. We did that. We spent money on it. We made sure we had surrogates from the entertainment community, from the influencer community, from the intellectual scholar community in our black urban culture. And we promoted it. And that was effective. So what we've learned now is a more informed electorate is a higher participating electorate. Historically, the method was just keep telling them to vote, just continue to bombard them with emails or robocalls. No, give them actual information and they will do the rest. And that is what we did in this election cycle. Progressives, Democrats, liberals have figured out a new way to do politics in the state of Georgia, and it was highly effective.
Yeah, and those votes were still incredibly close. So imagine absent those efforts. We could have, you know, a very narrow, but in the end, it doesn't matter how narrow it is, Kelly Loeffler still in the Senate, like, so thank you for those efforts. Obviously, much appreciated.
Man, our pleasure.
So we were watching the incident in DC yesterday and obviously appalled. I'm assuming there's a very good chance if you're watching this that you are as well, but it's important that you understand that not everybody around the country reacted the same way to the like the insane, violent people dying, bombs being planted, mob destroying those government buildings and trying to overthrow our government. 1 in 5 voters nationally, including almost half of Republicans, approved of yesterday's events. That literally killed people and could have killed far more. Almost half of Republicans are like, yes, that was good. Let's do that. Let's have more of that. Now, granted, almost half oppose it, so hooray. and the vast majority of the country opposes it since it was a terror attack on our Capitol. But like the closest we've come to the inciting incident of The Handmaid's Tale, half of the Republican Party says, yes, that was not a bad thing, that was a good thing. Maybe this explains the way Fox News is talking about it. They have to go talk to tens of millions of Americans who think that terror attack was great and they'd like to see more.
Yeah, that's exactly what it is. And so you have these pundits and hosts who will cater to the demographic that believes in criminality, right? I say something often, man. If you have to sell yourself out for the sake of having a platform, you don't deserve the platform that you have.
Yeah.
And we have seen it happen routinely, especially with conservative hosts and politicians. They don't really believe what they're saying, but there's an audience for the story. And because there's an audience for the story, they will continue to say it. And once again, chickens coming home to roost. And this is what's happening. I don't know when they will wake up and realize that leadership is not just about who you're able to excite, but true leadership is also about who you're willing to offend. And even on my program, I have said things that are contrary to the ideology of some of my listeners. I have some black militant listeners that listen to my show and call my show sometimes, and I have to stand against them. Now, I appreciate everyone listening to my show, but right is right and wrong is wrong, okay? And if you say something that I find to be personally, professionally, or even politically offensive, at my core, I would check you on it. I don't care how much you love me. I don't care how much you follow me. I don't care how much you think I'm the greatest thing on the radio. It doesn't matter to me. If I need that, I can't be a leader, period.
Yeah. Yeah. That's obviously a great position. That is a responsible position, but there's a lot of media that they're not having any of what you just said. Like they see how crazy people are and they think, first of all, I want those people to support me. I want them to watch me and give me their money. And if I can make them even crazier and make them even more devoted to me and convince them that I'm the only person they can trust, they'll do that. They are like, there is now an individual demonstrable profit incentive to personal radicalization. And and you know, you do enough of that and you can get half of a political party to think that a terror attack is justifiable.
Yeah, and you Trump can have is putting flood tiles on these suckers, man. Watch. Trump is going to make money off these individuals after he's president.
Yeah. Yeah. Look, if he doesn't have the power, I'm okay with it. You know, take their money. I don't care. Yep. It's sad. It's sad. But then also, so we sort of gave a little bit of quasi credit to the 43% of Republicans who didn't support this terror attack. Only a quarter think that this is a threat to democracy. Two-thirds say otherwise. I don't know, like you busted down the door to the Capitol and our political leaders, including of your party, had to flee for their safety. And that's not a threat to democracy. I don't know what would be at that
point. And the irony is, John, the irony is the fact that they were literally counting votes.
Right.
This happened while they were literally engaged in a constitutionally mandated process of democracy.
Yeah. Yeah, although as I pointed out yesterday, like think about the synergy between the Republican base and the Republican politicians. That the Republican politicians had to flee because the Republican base came in to stop the vote from going through. But they had to flee as those Republican politicians were trying to stop the vote from coming through. Like those were different tactics, I suppose, but the end goal was exactly the same.
It was the same.
Trump gets to stay in office. Anyway, as we go forward, obviously we've talked about earlier, there's a lot of politicians who are now pushing for Trump to be removed from office. What do the people think? Well, 50 to 42% voters say it would be appropriate to remove him from office over the events at the Capitol, although that includes only 1 in 10 Republicans. Think that him calling for and then justifying this attack justifies him being taken out. So if you are wondering what could happen that would cause Republicans to turn on Trump, scratch terror attack that he supports off the list, right? Because that's not enough.
Yeah, the list is endless, but you know, Trump figured something out before we did. Remember when he was campaigning, he said he could commit murder, right? Mm-hmm. And his followers would not stop following him. Well, he knew that back then. We didn't really know that. He knew that. But now what he's done is he has created politicians who will basically do the same thing. If this guy committed murder in front of other people, they will still defend him.
Yep. Yeah, and he said that he would shoot someone on Fifth Avenue. Well, yep. A woman was shot. He didn't shoot her, but Look, great tragedy that she was hurt. Wish that we could have gotten through all of this with nobody getting hurt whatsoever. We are learning more about her. We alluded to the fact that she is apparently an Air Force vet. And based on her social media activity, she had been being manipulated by tons of these people, believing these crazy conspiracy theories about voter fraud, retweeting people like Lynn Wood, who are talking about the Democrats being satanic pedophiles and how you need to overthrow this thing and all of that. And so they sent her out and she got killed. And other people died as well. So
yeah.
But man. You know, it's not enough to remove Trump. You know,
right.
The fact that he literally addressed those people.
There you go. The point is, Trump is not the end all. You don't solve the problematic issues that we're facing here in America just because you remove Donald J. Trump.
Yeah. We had just been moving towards this. No charges in the shooting and killing of Jacob Blake. The top prosecutor in Kenosha, Wisconsin declined to bring charges against the police officer who shot and gravely wounded Jacob Blake outside an apartment building in August, an episode that sparked protests and rioting and made the city an instant flashpoint in a summer of unrest that began with the killing of George Floyd. Mr. Blake's family expressed anguish at the decision not to charge the officer, saying that the video from the scene made it clear that Officer Chesky had acted inappropriately. His uncle said, it's a gut-wrenching experience. This is bigger, greater than little Jake. This is about all the little Jakes. That's why the people keep coming out and supporting us. You know why? Because it could have been them. A lawyer representing Mr. Blake's family said that they will probably sue. We will be looking at bringing a civil action in the near future to seek justice for Jacob. So again, this is one of those bits of news, Rashad, where we can't really be very shocked, but it is unfortunate.
Extremely unfortunate. And I think we need to bring this conversation back to the people. Cops are government workers. You mean to tell me that a government worker who has to take direction and order from somebody, that a government worker cannot figure out how to stop shooting black folks in the back? That's what you're telling me. And that every time it happens, the government simply has to say, well, we're not going to charge them with the crime. They may get suspended or fired. That is the unrest inside of the black community and communities that support them. It's not that cops will do bad things. It's not even that cops will sometimes do things that are negligent. It's because these cops are not held accountable. Every other profession, when you're engaged in the profession, you're held accountable to your professional understanding. And I learned something in law school last semester. And it was about your professional conduct. If you're a medical doctor and you screw up a surgery, well, they don't base your level of screw up on if I would have screwed it up. I'm not a freaking medical doctor. They base your level of responsibility on the professional experience that you have. These are professional individuals with a license to kill and training to go with it. So why are they held to a lower standard of accountability? They're not even held at the standard of accountability that I would be held at without the prerequisite training.
Yeah, and you know, one wonders, like when that incident happened and this officer shows up there, if that officer had been existing in a context where for the past couple of years, when you shoot someone and kill them needlessly, those cops have gone to jail. If that had been the case, would Jacob Blake have been shot? If the incentives were actually there to cause this cop to think twice before using deadly force.
Of course,
maybe this person would still be alive.
Yeah, yeah, no, he would ask. Yeah, this would not have happened this way. In the city of Atlanta, I was appointed to a task force to reimagine policing in the city of Atlanta. I made some recommendations, some of them got adopted. But one recommendation I made was that any police officer who shoots somebody, they need to take a lie detector test. And cops can be forced to actually take lie detector tests. That's something well established by departments all across the United States of America. In addition to that, they need to be drug tested immediately. They need to also undergo a psychological evaluation every 6 months to a year that they are on the job. The guy that got hired January 1 may not be the same guy December of that same year. We need to do some of these things just to vet and make sure we have the right people on the street. I'm not even talking about de-escalation training and everything else that still needs to happen. But these are some fundamental things we can do to make sure the community is safe.
I think those are great ideas. And now there's just basically nothing. It's the most routine thing in the world that you shot and killed a person. You didn't have to. We saw the entire thing. It wasn't necessary, but you're going to be fine. And in related news, we didn't get to this yesterday, but Kyle Rittenhouse, who ended up killing a couple of people at the protest that came about as a result of this, pled not guilty. And God only knows how that's going to end up. I have a pit in my stomach from the fear that he's going to end up walking free after, again, all that not just that happened, that we can watch in real time and tape.
Yep. Yeah. And this guy literally went there to kill somebody. I believe that 100%. He went to a protest, armed, wasn't supposed to have a gun, went there and he killed. The guy committed murder.
Yep. Oh man, the news lately. Okay, well, yeah. We're gonna go through one more story. We've only got a few minutes left. This one's a doozy. What's that?
Hang in there, John. You got it. We're almost there, brother.
Yeah, well, thank God you're here. Because you're making it tolerable. Okay, here we go. A couple of weeks ago on the show, we talked about reports that were coming out of some places in LA, actually, where rich people, well-connected people were attempting to get very early access to the vaccine in exchange for large amounts of money. And at the time, those doctors were saying, I've had those requests, but I haven't filled them. And so, hey, problem solved. Except that even in that video, we said, no, maybe these doctors aren't doing it. But there's no way that in America, if you have enough money, you aren't getting access to that thing before all of us peasants. And what do you know? It's happening. Let's talk about the Morse Life Health System, a high-end nursing home and assisted living facility in West Palm Beach, Florida. They've apparently made scarce coronavirus vaccines available, not just to its residents, but to board members and those who made generous donations to the facility, including members of the Palm Beach Country Club, according to multiple people who were offered access, some of whom accepted it. Now, the arrangement, which may have violated national immunization guidelines as well as state protocols. The vaccine doses are allocated to the state by the Trump administration, but reserved for people living in long-term care facilities who are at the highest risk of dying from COVID-19. Top health personnel in Palm Beach County did not authorize the vaccinations of non-residents at Morse Life, according to a health official who spoke on the condition of anonymity because they were not clear to discuss the issue and probably would have faced some sort of repercussions because this sort of thing, Ron DeSantis has done the wrong thing every step of the way when it comes to the pandemic. So God only knows what his position would be on this. But anyway, we've got a few more details we can potentially get to. But Rashad, at least in this case, people who've donated large amounts of money are getting to skip to the front of the line ahead of even the people living in those nursing homes to get access to the vaccine.
Rich people being corrupt and getting an advantage that others do not. This is the most shocking thing I've ever heard. I've never heard of such a thing. Wow. Yeah, man, it is not surprising. And obviously, this is just a microcosm. I'm sure that there's a whole lot more of this going on in the United States of America and beyond. But the bigger issue is the fact that we have made the dollar God in this country. And we're taking that infectious mentality to other places as well. And you see this, lack of care, this lack of transparency, all of this corruption because of what money not only does to a person, but what a money can do for a person. And that's what happens in a societal structure that says capitalism is at the top of the order for your life.
Yeah. No, I mean, my response is exactly the same as your first. Like, oh, shocked that they're getting it. But yeah, like Elon Musk isn't waiting until June. That's just not a thing.
Right.
And I don't know, considering all the other vaccine news that I'm hearing, I guess the silver lining is, hey, somebody's getting access to it. That's good. And hey, somebody actually wants to take it because a lot of the news I'm getting is even nurses and doctors in some places aren't taking it because of God only knows what, or doses are being wasted because some pharmacist who believes in anti-vax conspiracy theories is purposely leaving it out. I guess at least somebody's taking the vaccine. So maybe that's progress in America.
You know, and I feel it is progress to some level. It's funny, man. My producer at the television, the news television show I work for, came to me about maybe a month ago And he said, hey, Rashad, you're a local black leader. Would you mind taking the vaccine on live television? I say, hell to the no. I'm not going to take that vaccine until, and I may be selfish here, until I see what it does to other people. So if I got to look at what the rich, what's happening with the rich people, I look at what's happening with the rich people. I have a healthy distrust for the government. I just have that in my heart. And I know everybody doesn't feel like I feel, and that's fine. I'm not telling you what to do. I'm just telling you what I'm doing. This is one of the most difficult decisions I've had to make in a long time, because I want to be the responsible individual and lead people to this place of safety. But at the same time, I don't want this to be a Tuskegee. Mm-hmm. And that's a real battle inside of me.
But like, if you're waiting to see how it affects other people, like, so if Elon Musk starts acting weird, how are we going to know if that's the thing or just his natural evolution as an individual?
Listen, if that's the side effect, we're doomed, because we have no idea.
Exactly. Everything's so crazy, we wouldn't know. All our politicians have been, or most of them have been vaccinated at this point. I mean, God only knows.
Yeah.
Anyway, I want to skip to the last graphic in this, heads up to the director, because I wanted to remind people, like, yesterday was a darkly historic day, and I get that. And also, the Georgia elections just happened, and that's a huge thing. And you know, the fact that people died in the Capitol obviously is absolutely horrendous, and it's a tragedy. But let's also not forget the pandemic, because according to the COVID tracking project yesterday, 3,793 deaths were reported, making it the second highest date ever. Some other trackers say it's over 3,800, making it the highest day ever. We are like 10 months into this pandemic, and we are still breaking records. Far more than a 9/11 in one day at this late date. This thing is not over. It is far from over. So please, with all everything else going on, I get it. Don't let it stop you from taking this seriously, though, in terms of socially distancing, avoiding crowds, wearing masks, all those things. I know it sucks that you still have to do it. Like, I don't even remember what the inside of a gym looks like anymore. It's been a long time, but you do still have to do it, okay? To protect your life until, you know, hopefully we get past this thing.
Yeah, and I would echo that 100%. And I say this often to my brothers and sisters, especially those who like to go to church on Sunday. Church is who you are. The word church itself means ecclesia. It means called out people. And if you are a called out person, you are part of the church. The building is a place to congregate. And sometimes we're so fixated on getting an emotional high, we feel as if our world is destroyed because we can't go to a building on Sunday. I want you to be alive. Yeah. I tell my listeners this, I've echoed this. And I've had the great opportunity to preach at a lot of churches since COVID. And we do it via Zoom. We do it via virtual technology. And I promise you, the Bible and the prayers read the exact same over Zoom as they do when you're in person.
They do. I think that's great advice. Rashad, as always, thank you so much for joining us. Where can people listen to you?
They can listen to me Monday through Friday, 7 a.m. to 10 a.m. on News and Talk 1380 WAOK. You can find that show online at WAOK.com. And also, you can listen by downloading the radio app.
Awesome. Dr. Rashad Rishi, as always, it's a pleasure having you on. Thank you.
Pleasure to be here. Thank you, my friend.
Yesterday, DC was the site of incredible political extremism as well as violence, with Trump supporters storming government buildings, leaving four dead in their wake and a number of others injured. Joining us now to discuss the event and some of what sprung from it is the politics reporter at The Intercept, Akayla Lacey. Welcome back to the Damage Report.
Hey, John. Thanks for having me.
Glad to have you here. So, first of all, like, I feel like with every person I've talked to since the event, first, just what are you thinking when you were watching it happen in real time? You know, what were your impressions?
A mixture of just like rage and disbelief that there was not a prepared response to this. Like, it was not news that this was going to happen. We had known about this for weeks, and just watching you know, mainstream news anchors, like, with a tone of kind of like shock and awe, like, just watching this unfold when, again, we all knew about this. And I just kept hearing echoes of coverage from this summer in my head, where the tone was much more kind of like talking down to people who were protesting, and sort of like, you know, more of like a paternalistic tone, and as opposed to this, which we were just like hearing people be like, I can't believe this is happening. I don't know how we got to this space. And it's like, well, actually, like, it's just that the police weren't taking it seriously because they're aligned with the people who were staging this vicious attack on the Capitol. And just thinking back to times, you know, I reported from the Capitol for a couple of years when I was in DC, and thinking about, you know, not being able to walk basically anywhere without getting yelled at by Capitol police asking to see my badge. Just knowing how strict the security is there and watching this happen was just, I mean, it was just, it's really disturbing. I think everyone is feeling.
Yeah, I agree. I don't get anyone who's shocked that the movement exists or that it wanted to do these insane things. But the fact that it got as far as it did, I found to be a little bit surprising. And you have a lot more familiarity with the security there than me. So like, I'm left wondering, like we can see footage like the gates being opened up and things like that. It's all highly suspicious, and the Capitol Police waited a very long time before like sort of directly addressing why this failure occurred. And their initial statement this morning seemed to imply that sure, we knew that there was some sort of First Amendment activity that was going to be going on, but that this wasn't what that was. But who thought that this was just going to be a gathering, just going to be a speech? Like that statement just seems inherently deceitful to me.
I mean, we watched the Capitol Police, like, you know, well, we watched police in DC like tear gas protesters for being blocks away from the Capitol and from the White House, you know, earlier this summer. So I think, I mean, people know that the Capitol Police are, you know, they're not necessary just because they're a different police force. Like, we don't have different expectations from them that we do from other types of law enforcement. But at the same time, I mean, there are thousands of them. We only saw, you know, there's videos of like one or two police officers getting stuck in the Capitol, getting like barraged by these people in the mob. And you're thinking to yourself, like, you know, when I would walk in just on the side door, there's like 10 cops standing at the metal detectors. And so it's like, okay, well, were you guys just having coffee? Like, were you down somewhere else, like having lunch? Like, what? This was hours and hours that this took for them to actually breach the security of the Capitol. So, I mean, on the one hand, you know, I'm talking to staffers who are good friends with the Capitol Police and are saying, you know, like, this was a traumatic experience for all of us combined. But the question is raised, you know, at least from at the top levels of administration of USCP, like, Why was there no preparation for this? And I think, I mean, staffers and members on the Hill are asking questions about this too. You know, they're discussing whether to ask for more information from Capitol Police on what happened, discussing, you know, sending letters to leadership to try to get more information on this. Ayanna Pressley announced last night that she was calling on the House Oversight Committee to launch an investigation into what happened. So this is going to take a while to get to the bottom of, and Capitol Police is notoriously not very responsive to requests for information. And so again, we saw, you know, they didn't put out a statement until midday today, we were trying to call and get comment from them yesterday. So it's just a freaking mess.
Yeah. And look, this is almost certainly going to the area of speculation, so feel free to not respond. But you know, based on the reactions that we've seen to many protests, the way that they respond to when, you know, two hippies get together with guitars, they come in with batons and gas grenades and stuff like that. When the Proud Boys are destroying things, the cops are like giving them advice and stuff like that. So it is possible that there's just a sort of ideological just warmth there that might cause them to not take it seriously. But some people are concerned that Donald Trump is not just a passive viewer to all of this. He's been calling for this sort of action for some time. To your knowledge, the Capitol Police, the Trump administration is obviously, you know, presidency, White House, all of that. Would they in theory have any control over that if they had wanted to tell them to back off or to not prepare? Is there any inroads for influence from Trump or the White House, or is that just so separate that it doesn't make sense to speculate in that area?
I think it's pretty separate. And honestly, I mean, Trump seemed very preoccupied with Mike Pence, you know, basically telling him that he couldn't overturn the election results yesterday. He didn't really seem concerned about this at all. And so I would be very surprised if, you know, Donald Trump is very hands-off president. I mean, I don't see him, you know, giving the directive from the top down to like tell Capitol Police to stand back on this. I think, and talking to staffers also, like, it just, you mentioned that they're ideologically aligned. There's also the fact that like they were not, you know, they were a largely white group of protesters. We know that police brutality can, you know, police will be brutal against protesters no matter what the color of their skin was. But like the idea that they're going there to protest, or not to protest, but to rage, you know, in favor of the president has a lot to do with, and I mean, we know that law enforcement is largely supportive of the president and, you know, in a lot of circles. And so I think that that has a lot to do with it. And just, I mean, the human aspect of not, you know, and this is talking to a staffer from this morning, but like that we give the benefit of the doubt to groups of people who look like this and who support these kind of ideas more than we do to people who are protesting, yeah, you know, against police brutality, for example. So, you know, I think it's human to want to try to find the, and even myself, I was like, you know, this seems really shady. Like what happened? And like, I honestly, it remains to be seen what actually happened, but I think it's more of a simple explanation than we think it is, which is even more disturbing in some ways. Right. Yeah.
So, you're almost certainly right. And I try to assume that in all these cases, I don't know what I'm talking about and I proceed accordingly. That's why we bring on experts like you. So you had the lack of preparedness to stop them for instance, breaching the buildings, going ransacking offices and things like that. Then you also had the fact that from what I've seen, at least according to Capitol Police this morning, they had arrested like 68 people. Which, look, I know that you've covered a lot of protests, both in and outside of DC. When they want to arrest a lot of people, they are capable of arresting a lot of people. And so you've said that there's now these efforts to get some oversight and find out what happened. We know that some like prominent alt-right figures, they live streamed themselves from inside of the building. Is there going to be pressure to go and track some of these people down who made very clear what they were doing?
Yes. And I mean, I heard that the FBI is now looking for information on this QAnon guy who has given, you know, dozens of interviews already. It's not like these people are hiding. And so it's just ridiculous.
Are you talking about the guy with the horns?
Yeah, I think so. I don't quote me, but I mean, there is pressure to figure this stuff out. But again, it's like, it was all out in the open. So if they didn't care until just yesterday, like, I don't think that they're going to put that many resources into tracking these people down. And a HuffPost reporter noted this on Twitter the other day, Ryan Riley, that it's nearly impossible for them to get these people after they allowed them to leave the Capitol. I mean, we watched a police officer escorting a woman down the stairs after they broke the windows in the Capitol. So, I mean, yeah, there's pressure. There's going to be pressure on them. I don't think that will cause any movement. And not to mention, there are like thousands of people still facing charges from misdemeanors to felonies from being at protests this summer for doing nothing, basically. And so I don't know that we can have a lot of faith in law enforcement to do their job in this case, obviously, given what we saw yesterday. But yeah, I mean, I was talking with my colleague the other day about how we watched like high schoolers get arrested for sitting peacefully in front of Nancy Pelosi's office a few years ago. And like they arrest Sunrise Movement protesters all the time in the Capitol. Like, yes, they do have the power to do this when they want to. And yeah, when police came out in droves to you know, monitor protests in New York and in Philadelphia and in DC, and seeing just, you know, being in those situations and feeling the fear that you see when you're standing in front of a wall of police officers in riot gear, and then understanding that the people who sieged the Capitol yesterday did not have any fear of that whatsoever, just tells you basically everything you need to know about what we can expect from the, you know, the resolution of the situation. Unfortunately, I feel like it probably will all blow over, and once Biden is inaugurated, like, we're just gonna move on. I don't have a lot of faith at this point.
That's probably the safe bet at this point. Finally, though, you know, perhaps contributing to the process of blowing over between today and the inauguration, it's looking more and more like, I guess, we don't have a government anymore. Trump is basically checked out. He's done. The Senate is adjourned until I think the 19th, and the House, as of right now, is done until the inauguration. So, like, they're all sending tweets and saying, hey, maybe we should get Trump out of here. Why don't we remove him from office? But they're all also gone. Do you think that that's gonna stick? Like, or is there going to be an effort to call them back prematurely?
So I do know, I was just on the phone with a member of Congress, Mary O'Scanlan, who said that they are working on a letter to send to leadership right now, asking that they come back on Monday. Members do want to have a little bit of time to recuperate. Yesterday was extremely traumatic for everyone who was involved. And I understand that. I think it makes sense for them to not want to necessarily come back today, but they came back last night. There's still a ton of work to do. And a lot of members are really upset that there hasn't been more of a clear coordinated response today. I mean, Pelosi just gave a press conference and it sounds like they are either going to move forward with articles of impeachment or try to invoke the 25th Amendment. But again, if they're not there, there's not much they can do. So it remains to be seen, but there is pressure on them to come back on Monday.
Okay, seems reasonable. I understand wanting to have a couple of days off. You know, they conceivably could have been injured or killed. I just saw a photograph before we did this interview of one of the individuals in the chamber of Congress that had a handful of zip ties, which is the sort of thing you bring when you're planning to take hostages. Who knows? We don't know. It's a chaotic situation, but I understand a little bit of time, but you know, we are still in the middle of a pandemic and God only knows what's gonna happen.
That too. They could have time to pass another stimulus bill or something, or like, yeah, you know, members want to be there to see to see the new senator sworn in as well. So
Totally. Well, everyone watching this, Akayla's work is available at The Intercept. She does great journalism on a number of different topics, and we really do appreciate you joining us once again. Thank you.
Thanks for having me, John.
Thanks for listening to the full episode of The Damage Report. Support our work, listen ad-free, access members-only bonus content, and more by subscribing to Apple Podcasts at apple.co/TYT. I'm your host, John Adirola. I'll see you soon.